Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. My co-host today, Jennifer Ann Gordon.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Well, you know, miss your, you know, vacation all over the world and flying, jet setting.
Oh, yes, jet setting. That is what I would, that's what I pretend I'm doing, but I was traveling, so that.
Well, I saw you with some camels on.
Yes, I went to Morocco.
See, this is it. Did you go on your own private jet, or?
Oh, yeah, and I shared it with like 300 other people because I was just feeling very benevolent. I even sat in one of the really inexpensive seats near the bathroom. Just wow. So other people could have a great experience.
Wow, what a nice, nice person to do
that. It was the holidays.
So what's going on? What did you do on New Year's and Christmas and all that? Did you Morocco? You were back before that. Christmas.
Yeah, I was in Morocco for Thanksgiving and the beginning of December. Christmas, I did absolutely nothing. I think I slept in. But on New Year's Eve, I had friends over to play board games, and we had a potato party where we all brought different potato dishes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
It seemed like a really good idea when we were just laughing about it in theory, and then all of a sudden we just had so many potatoes, like potato soup. I made little mashed potato flights, all different types of mashed potatoes,
That's interesting. Did you have potatoes, you know, inject it with alcohol, too, for people?
Oh, that was just the vodka.
Interesting. There we go. Well, here we go. So it's the first show for you back. This is our second week back into the game now. So we've got a dynamic duo back again. It's Batman and Robin, sort of. Not really, but we're going to be talking about a book called The Killer Enigma, Magnolia Bluff. Crime Chronicles, and that's book 16. Boy, I'm tired of saying that. So here we go. We got Charles Brakefield. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Rox Berkey. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having us, Alan.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So guys, what kind of crime do you get into over the New Year's and holiday season?
I'm under a non-disclosure for those kinds of questions, Alan.
You should have addressed that, Charles, before the show when we said, is there anything we can't talk about?
Yeah.
Now we're intrigued.
We got the police records here and pictures. So, you know, what do you do over holidays? Do you guys stop writing, either one of you? Like, Charles, do you stop writing over the holidays?
No, it's I have so much fun doing it. I mean, I probably ought to be arrested for having that much fun without laughing. So, plodding through the stories, some of the marketing approaches, some of the new things that you can learn. You know, hey, I haven't tried this yet. I wonder what this does. Oh, it blows up in your face, and you got to relearn what you thought you knew. So it's good. It's a good time to be able to practice. It's a good time to be able to exercise the little gray cells, as the Hercule Poirot would say, and look for new attack vectors in the Crime Chronicles world.
Oh, I bet. So, how about you, Rox? What do you do? You're the party animal, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I am the party animal. Actually, I was actually pretty busy. I did some travel, but it was certainly not as exciting as Jennifer's travel. I want to get on your travel schedule, Jennifer. That would be really fun. Camels. Camels and warmth just seem to really attract me right this moment.
It was amazing, I won't lie.
I bet it was. But I actually went, I made a few trips to Denver and visited some bookstores and had a lot of fun doing that. Got to see some of the most beautiful snowfall. And this was when Texas was sitting at, 78 degrees. So it was one of those snowfall issues where you kind of wave goodbye to it after a couple of days. It was great that way. That was a lot of fun. And then I've been visiting family over the holidays, doing a lot of driving and had a cookie event. So once a year, I try to put together an event with my closest author friends in the area. And Charles comes over to help too and make sure that everybody is on track with the cookies. And we cook, somewhere around, I want to say 10 dozen or no, it was more than that. Probably 20 dozen cookies. Of all different colors and shapes and sizes and, took pictures of them and had a lot of fun in between there. You know, it's not like injecting vodka into potatoes. However.
I was going to say, did you have potato cookies?
No.
Potato cookies?
No potato cookies. But I got to tell you, the amaretto ones were great.
Yeah, see,
they go the fastest. Okay, I'm telling you, they go the fastest.
Now we're getting the truth.
Yeah, and that's with me, making sure that everybody's, adult.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Beverages well brimmed, so they can slop up some of the recipes, and we all get to laugh about it.
Well, next year you have to do a potato cookie.
I think that would be fun. I don't know where the sweet side of that would be. I'd have to look at that, Jennifer. I may have to call you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not good with sweet things, hence why I just did potatoes at my party. But yeah, now I'm intrigued.
Well, there you go. I think didn't you bring home a camel too, Jennifer? Snuck it on the plane.
Oh, my God. On the plane, yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you have a private jet. You
can, yeah.
I just got to know, did they spit it, really?
It wasn't too bad. I was a little bit scared. But I feel like, so when we were riding these camels, a bunch of their little babies were coming along with us. And I feel like all of the camel parents were on their best behavior because their little baby camels were with them. So no spitting.
Oh.
Other bodily fluids, but not
that's for the X-rated version, not for this.
Oh no, not those kind of bodily fluids.
Well, guys, so you're back now. What now? This killer enigma. Let's talk about that. You know, it's book 16. So, what is this series about? So, people that don't know you or don't know the series, let's give a basic rundown of what this series is. We can start with. What, Charles?
The Crime Chronicles series started about, I guess, almost 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We were invited to participate with a flock of, well, not a flock, but nine or ten other authors in this interesting event called the Crime Chronicles. It got started from one of our renegade friends said, "Here, I need something for my blog post." They threw out a picture of a boat to all of us and said, "Write me a short story in your own genre, and you get 2 weeks." We sent through to him, and everybody had so much fun. You know, imagine a single picture of a boat kind of washed up, and everybody's imagination running wild in their particular genre, writing the story. And we took it, assembled it, published it. It was such a fun exercise that somebody says, "You know, we could do this with a whole city. Let's invent a city," which is what we did, Magnolia Bluff in Texas, naturally, because we had some of the best crime money can buy in this state. And we got to participate in the first year, the second year, invited back for the third year, and we even have a position on the fourth year. And everybody writes their own book, has creative content licensing on it, but it's part of the series, and we use the same similar branding for all the books, same similar pricing. we even shop it back and forth with each other, saying, okay, how's this look? What do you think? And help give it that extra polish. We use some of the same characters. It's been kind of a fun exercise because you have to be careful not to whack somebody's character that they want to keep, and vice versa. So, imagine looking at your hometown and a whole bunch of people putting together a single story from their point of view, and it's all about the different crimes and the different individuals that that we find within the organization, and it's definitely a lot of fun.
And Rocks, maybe you want to give a description of the book.
I think it's very interesting, and you did highlight that we have book 16 with the Killer Enigma, which we do. We also had book 5 in the series called The Flower Enigma, and as Charles was saying, this does take place in Texas, but it's actually in the hill country of Texas. And for those who haven't been there, this is an area that's really pretty. It's got rolling hills, and I emphasize the word hills because we probably aren't over 200 feet above sea level. Okay, so they're definitely hills, not mountains. But they're fun, and they're small communities, small town, originally settled places that some stayed, some didn't stay, and this one happened to grow up near a reservoir in Texas. And so, you know, each of the authors creates their own characters, their own scenario. But if you have ever lived in a town where everybody knows everybody's business, that's like Texas. And so the point of views are different. And you know, I like my next door neighbor, but Charles doesn't like the next door neighbor. And they're maybe for two different reasons. So that's why we can use these characters and make them fun. But we have our own police. We have our own librarian. And every one of the authors does write a self-contained book. So there's no cliffhanger per se in any of these. But it's been fun. And they're just, somebody dies. Most of them are along the genre of cozy mystery kind of style, which for us was a big leap because we've been doing thrillers. We haven't really been doing the cozy mystery style. So that was one of the reasons it was so intriguing to jump into here. So, you know, we've got a cozy mystery thing going on, and Killer Enigma, it was, I don't know, how many years was it in the making? Like 30 years in the making or something like that to actually uncover the secrets.
Yep. This sounds really, I don't want to say overwhelming, but I just can't believe the organization this must take for not only you two are writing together, but, you know, kind of collaborating with all of these different people. So I'll get back to that. I want to talk a little bit about the whole cozy mystery thing, because when you said that, like, my ears perked up. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know, like, how did you go about creating a cozy mystery vibe in this whole, like, techno-thriller way that you're used to writing? Like, was that difficult? Did you have to start engrossing yourself in cozy mysteries? Were you watching Murder, She Wrote?
Well, fortunately, I don't watch TV. I'm one of these rare people that just, I don't watch TV. If I have free time, I write. But I do read a lot, and I review a lot of books across a whole myriad of genres. And so many of the authors that are in here actually started with cozy mysteries. So we have had a little bit of mentoring in order to be able to do this, and we're good friends with them. But it was different. So what we do is, you know, the cozy mystery as we understand it is, you know, people die. You're not necessarily seeing blood and gore and all of that kind of stuff. And any romance that would ever possibly happen in a cozy mystery would happen behind closed doors. So it's a whole different viewpoint. But, you know, we can't always eliminate all of the technology. And so we do use some of the techno stuff to solve some of the mysteries that are going on in Magnolia Bluff.
Well, and we did get, to be fair, we did get a good hefty taste of mysteries in all of the on our techno thrillers, because that's it. Always look like how is this happening? Why is this happening? And it's those are events, and you know, we had I'd like to say good practice in the thriller series of mysteries, but taking them into a particular town with a particular point of view. And to be able to have it shoehorned nicely into the the Cozy Mystery series. I think we've had good success being able to obey the rules for Cozy Mystery and have fun with some of the technology way, you know, kind of very in the background, not spending a whole lot of time on it, but always drawing up on it when it's necessary to be able to solve a crime.
What, you know, when you take the small town kind of feeling and stuff,
mm-hmm.
what do you think, like, the difference is? Of course, it's obvious, but when you're writing, how do you capture that feeling for someone that's never been to a small town or lived in a small town? I guess I should say they never grew up. So what kind of elements do you have to add just to make sure people kind of get it?
So we decided that we would have some of the elements that we see in small towns in Texas, because we're in, so it makes it a little easier from that perspective. But most of the small towns that have survived, you know, they know everybody. They sometimes have a square, you know, a town square where you have a clock and you have a couple of major, and I say major in a very tongue-in-cheek kind of way, businesses that have survived for a couple of generations, perhaps. They're not huge. They're not desperately powerful. You know, they have festivals to celebrate almost everything on the planet just because they want to be able to get together. They have picnics. They go to church. But each person has their own, I don't know, idiosyncrasy. So we chose that our visitors to Magnolia Bluff went to a bed and breakfast. And the bed and breakfast is, you know, they cook their own food in the morning. They have maybe 10 rooms that they're offering to guests as far as overnight kind of stays. And they know everything about everyone, kind of like, you know, listening to a phone call. It's like they're always listening or telling somebody.
Yeah, one of the uniquenesses about it is that they say, they don't say, oh, go to the hardware store. They go say, go to Bill's place. Go to, instead of going to the library, go see Caroline. They all know who that is or where that is as soon as you say who, because they have that kind of identity with the people and the business that they're referring somebody to. And so it's, you don't call the police, you know, you call Tommy Yager. Those are the kind of subtleties that you don't get in a big town, but it's ingrained in the small town.
So you want to know about potatoes and you know, go to Jennifer. She does all that.
Jennifer would be perfect in there. You're going to have a new little business called Jennifer's Taters.
Yeah, Jennifer's Potato Parties. I could be a potato party planner. you know, I love, like, I am, like, I think books and TV shows and movies set in small towns, I'm so fascinated by it. Like growing up maybe on like Twin Peaks, and I read Peyton Place when I was too young. I just love that every small town has a million little stories brewing right underneath. Is there kind of like a soap operatic feel to any of these cozy mysteries that you've been writing?
I think to kind of a degree, Jennifer, you're spot on. Because everybody wants to know what everybody did and why they did it and who went out with somebody or who killed somebody and why would they kill them. And, oh, my gosh, that happened in high school and they did what? I mean, you know, that kind of judgmental kind of attitudes that you get with, like you say, the little small town soap operas or places. Peyton Place.
I live in a small town. I get it.
And see, that's the beauty of this, is because a lot of people do live in small towns, not in Texas. But there are elements of this that I believe bring readers into the story. Because even if you don't know Lily personally, you know somebody like her if you've been in your location for a number of years. Because you get acquainted with people.
I mean, at one point we have Lily calling 911. And she barks under the phone, and there's this disbelief. I won't go into all the portion of it, but she snarls at it and says, Robert, don't use that tongue with me. She already knows who she's talking to. She already knows when she called 911, it's Robert. You know, he's the one in the that's usually answers the phone for this city, this municipality. So they know each other. They're well plugged in. they know each other's foibles, and that's sort of the fun exercise of teasing that out during the story. As you get to the part where it's like, we have a dead body? Really? Who did this?
You know, so let us find out. Now, who have you used in real life in this?
I was going to ask that. I was like, and how many of these people are based on your writer friends that were at your cookie party?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you couldn't, because how couldn't you, in a sense, because if you're in a really small place and there's only so many people, I don't know how they couldn't creep into these books when you're writing it this way.
So elements of them certainly do. We actually have one of the authors at the cookie party, and she had five groups of friends that she went out with, and they all wanted to buy four parts in her next book in this particular series. So there are elements of people that we know, and of course, they're still under non-disclosure. Charles said that up front, where we can't talk about who they are.
The truth behind the fiction.
Yeah. The most popular place in town, though, can you guys guess that? Because, I mean, it's kind of stunning if you think about it.
The hardware store.
No, it's the cemetery. It gets the most business.
I should have guessed that. My horror credentials are going out the window.
I know, Jennifer. I thought you'd have it.
I should have gone with my instincts.
Well, you know, so now, okay, what is a techno thriller when you talk about stuff? And how do you, I'm guessing, I kind of know that there's some technology aspects. So how do you know what to incorporate in something like that?
So in the cozy mystery, we use the technology knowledge that one of our protagonists has, JJ, to specifically help identify different things in a much faster manner, and in working in conjunction with the police. And so that's how we leverage the technology in the cozy mystery. In the thrillers, then it's much more involved and much more, you know, lots and lots of technology, high tech stuff, you know, on the leading edge being used and leveraged into the different stories. But there's still a certain amount of satellite communication and access to volumes of data to help sift through and find historical information or deeds of records, which is part of what that particular story was. How did all of the original foundational problems transfer? And it's because there is so much data out there. If you have access to data and you know how to go through it, you can get answers pretty quickly. So I think that's how we leverage the technology or the techno aspect in this book. I don't know, Charles, can you add on to that?
It's more the amount or how deep the technology threat is. Now, in the techno thrillers, I mean, basically it's, you know, an easy one to be able to describe is ransomware. You know, all right, who's launched this? We're being held hostage. Quick, you know, I need help, freeing all my technology from the grip of this ransomware. And that might have a greater flavor in the techno thriller. In the Magnolia Bluff series, we tend to take a very secondary position, and we do more of the amateur sleuthing, more of the let's go see these people and talk through it, much like a regular detective would. But that's not their first job. The first job was actually trying to have a getaway weekend, rediscover the romance, and they step into a crime that's like, okay, they can't walk away from because it looks like, it's their fault. So, they need a certain amount of clarity from the situation. They want to be able to help solve a 30-year-old mystery. And if they use a little bit of technology to be able to do that, that's okay too.
And so when you've got the two main characters, JJ and Joe, how do you write that with two of you? Like, does one do one character, one do the other, or do you just both collaborate on the characters?
I love this question. Thank you, Alan. That's one of my favorites. No, we really do collaborate on the characters. Characters have certain attributes to them. Girls are different from boys. But we don't write specifically from one character to another. We write a chapter at a time. So he'll write one chapter, I'll write something else.
and based on the outline of where we want the story to go. So we divide it by chapters. Then we exchange it to make certain that the flavor of the dialogue, the flavor of the actions are suitable for a guy or a girl. And that's worked very well for us because he'll come back and say, there's no guy on the planet that's going to say it the way you said it. And so then we change it. And the same thing goes true. Even though he's got daughters, some of the girls' language is very different from what he says sometimes. So we smooth it so it sounds like a single voice. And it's hard to tell who writes which portions. And one of the best compliments we get is when somebody says, so which one of you wrote this? And the answer is always yes. Because one, we probably don't know who actually wrote that line anymore. It's been through so many versions.
Well, we know Charles writes for the female character.
Heck yeah.
Well, then it has to be edited so that it sounds like a female actually wrote it, said it. So, yeah. Full disclosure, there it is.
So how long have you two been collaborating like this? And so that's one question. And I also, when you said you exchanged chapters, are you writing the books chronologically or do you kind of vie for like, oh, I know in chapter 20 this is going to happen and I want to write it right now? So how long have you been doing this and then the process itself, chronological?
Okay. You wanted me to take that one, Roxanne?
Go right ahead.
All right. So to answer your question, how long we've been collaborating like this on writing? Since the first part of this century.
Oh, no, not again.
Yeah, she hates it when I do that. It cracks me up, think about that. We were doing tech manuals before we hit on the idea, or she hit on the idea, after I got irritated with the, having to rewrite the technical manuals. She said, hey, let's short circuit this. Let's just do fiction. We'll do fiction and we'll make in some technical goodies. And that way you can, do the propeller head thing that you love to do, Charles. And we'll tell stories that are engaging and satisfying. And so that's been pretty much the way that we've been working. It's probably close to 15 years in the fictional area. Is probably the best way that I can categorize it based on the instant message window I got from Rox. And so there's that extra reminder of, for things I forget. But the, how do we do the, these kind of chapters? Are there some chapters that just spring to life? I do not recall how many times I've woken up from a power nap or come up from before breakfast, like, I know that chapter that I'm going to write. I don't know where it's going to end up. I never think in terms of, where number, Jennifer, chapter 20. It's like, here's an event. Here's a part of the story I know has to be plugged in at some point. And that's where the creativity of Madame Berkey comes in. She goes, I know. And she says the most terrifying four words in her vocabulary. I have an idea.
So, Rox, you have to tell us what when Charles writes a really bad character chapter, how do you tell him?
How do I tell him? I don't. I just keep moving it in the story or I cut it.
I was going to say, can you just delete it and say, oh, my gosh, something weird happened with no. my computer? You probably can't get away with that because you guys know technical things.
Yeah,
she sent me a picture of the delete key. Okay, that's what I get.
No, come on now. No, but I will. If it can be leveraged, writing is interesting. If you sit down and you write something every day, sometimes it's not going to be in your book. It might be in a blog. It might go here. It might go there. I have this little glass half full belief that you save that nugget for some point in time. And so if it can fit into the book, it's never that bad. He's a very good writer. So it may move on to a further place. There was one instance in one book where he wrote a chapter, and it started out that he gave me the chapter when we were like on chapter 6. It finally found its home in about 54.
Wow.
I wanted to see if there was some fighting going on here. We want some gossip and...
We want drama.
No, we rock, paper, scissors.
Just lie to us. Lie to the listeners.
We're not lying. I mean, she wins whenever it comes down to that. Okay, I want this. I want that. All right, rock, paper, scissors. I have never won a rock, paper, scissors competition with her ever. So when it comes down to that, okay, whatever you want to do, move it off. You know, I'll hit the delete key. If you don't like it, fine.
Wow, there you go. But okay, so listen. So what do each of you get out of writing? Like, what is it that you know? Does it change you, or do you kind of have some growth when you write through your characters like this? Start with Rox.
I do. I think every time I address a character and find a new element to put into them, I do. I think I do better, and I think I get a little charge out of it. It's like, wow, I finally got how I really wanted them to behave, or how I really thought. Or they tell me how they want to behave. But mostly I think it's just that I finally get my head screwed on the right way and it works. But I like it because it gives me a chance to explore differences in a way I can't do it in just regular work. You know, I mean, people think you're pretty weird if you do it that way. But in a book, you can get away with it.
And Charles, what about yourself?
A lot of what'll happen to me is that I'll sit behind the sunglasses of that character and just, okay, here's the surroundings, here's the event, here's the circumstances that they're, how would I, that particular scenario? And sometimes what I get to cranking on it, and the character will tell me, no. I want to take the story this way, not the way that you're doing. And so it's that aha moment of like, oh, it's teaching me something. And so it's a exploration, it's a discovery. It's sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's a little spooky, because it's like I'll come up with something that Rox will say, "Oh wow, this is better than usual. Let me see what I can do with it." And that's always very gratifying. So those were events with I'd like cultivating those the most.
Well, and you guys, it sounds like live through your characters. You hear them, you interact with them, you have a relationship with them. So what happens to them when you have to kill them, or when they die, or when they go away, or if a book ends? Do your characters leave?
You know, the reason we started the books, the thriller books, the first series, and Charles said, well, oh, good, here's the first chapter. He bought into my idea. He goes, this will be a trilogy. And I went, no, it's a series. Because I don't want to have to kill these people. So we have killed them, and it's so sad. The bad guys getting killed never bothers me at all. But the good guys, the good guys dying, that's tough. It's like losing a friend. It's like losing a family member.
We actually had to back up on a character that we had a strong affinity to, and we at first thought, well, let's go ahead and whack her. And we got to it, like, read through it, and like, no. Do something else. We're going to reuse her at some point. And we did. And she actually showed up in a couple different books. Always the, she's known as Master Poe. And she actually had greater longevity than what I ever envisioned. But because the stories that showed up, the story threads like that we looked at, we plug in characters. We've got a, what I would consider a fairly good character universe, that have probably run the gamut of most of the books we want to be able to do. That's why we started the second series in the Enigma Tracer as a sort of a compendium, or sort of the next phase of the people who take over after you're gone. So it's a very interesting approach. You plug in characters, you take them out. Probably the best compliment I remember was a reviewer that complained. He said, "I didn't want to feel sorry for that guy, but I couldn't help myself. I really didn't want to see. I felt so sorry for him, even though he was an antagonist." And so that's when we know we're hitting on all cylinders for a character. And sometimes they come back, and sometimes they don't. They just maybe drift off.
I love that, Charles. Honestly, I think as writers in general, I think it's one of our favorite compliments when somebody really loves one of our villains something, or understands them. Do each of you have a favorite character that you just absolutely adore writing? rocks you can take.
I've had different characters that I like along the way. I like the first character, the main protagonist in Factor, and he grew up and changed, and he's been in a couple of short stories, and Jacob Michaels is who he is, and he's one of my favorites. The very best favorite that probably will never die, fortunately, is Ichabod. And Ichabod's a supercomputer with every possible capability there is. And boy, it's been fun writing him.
I'd have to agree with that. The Ichabod is the artificial enhanced, intelligent enhanced supercomputer. In book five, he petitions the main programmer, Dr. Quip. He says, "I don't understand humor. Explain humor to me." And we have fun with little snippets of that dashing in and out of the techno thriller. I mean, they're trying to figure out, you know, who's distorting the commodities market, who's tampering with the future, who's predicting. It's like, whoa! And then, you know, here's the supercomputer helping you break the bad guys down, and he wants to learn about humor. It's those kind of juxtapositions that we like to explore throughout the books, and Ichabod. We started poking fun at ourselves as technologists early on. It's actually an acronym, and it stands for Immersive Collaborative Associative Binary Override Deterministic Systems, which doesn't really mean anything, but it was a fun string of characters to be able to refer to. And he basically, he's probably my favorite character to write for in the series.
So how do you tackle writing your bad people? You said you really liked writing evil characters or so. So how is it that you explain that, or how much detail do you put into your bad people?
Some of them have quite a bit of detail, and we either get it from people that we have known and worked with that have been close to the leading edge of evil, or a combination, which a lot of our characters are really a combination to a degree, become their own person, as it were. But some of them, quite a few, in this particular book that we're talking about, The Killer Enigma, the bad character in this book appears very early, and it's not obvious how bad they are. It's not quite there, but there are layers to everybody, and you peel back the layers of the person and why they did or did not do the steps to get to where they are today. It's always interesting. The kind of the psychology behind it is fascinating to me, that people could be so icky, for lack of a better term. Some people are just icky.
Is that the technical term?
Yeah,
Well, at one point we were every once in a while we'll get this idea. Hey, let's petition our email folks and say, we're looking for some characters for this next book. Who wants to be the evil genius? Who wants to be the evil femme fatale? And who wants to be the reluctant hero? And you wouldn't believe how many people show up saying, "Oh, I want the evil genius." And I pulled that on somebody at one of the conventions we were at. And, his buddy looked at me and goes, "I can see the evil part, not the genius, though."
Oh, there you go. Well, we still want some names of these bad people so we can get them on the phone here. Start a debate here.
Well, the couple that I immortalized at Rox's forbearance in Enigma Rising, we did a lot of character study, and most of them were people I know, have known, and hopefully they're still behind bars.
So you hang out with a lot of people behind bars.
Not anymore.
Well, you know, not anymore. Yeah, I'm on parole, okay? Yeah, you know, hey.
Well, there you go. See, we're getting the detail here. Yeah. I want to know. So what is it that, when you're doing a book like this, what is it you hope people will take away from the book? So, you know, I pick it up, take it home, read it. What is it? Is it pure entertainment? Is that it? Or do you have some sort of subtext or meaning?
I think for these books specifically, in this particular Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles, it's that they enjoy the stories and find them creative and fulfilling, and you know, like a great mystery, lots of twists and turns. The techno thrillers, there's always been a hidden message of people taking care of their security in dealing in our connected world. And there's different little things in there. Without writing a textbook for them, without delivering a class in college, just kind of take care of yourself a little bit. But no, the mysteries are different from what I want people to get out of. What do you want, Charles? What do you want people to get out of?
I want them to, you know, close the chapter, close the book and say, what a great story. You know, I was, I didn't see the twist that I expected to be able to do it this way, and you guys surprised me. That's gratifying, because it means that, and I've done that, hey, I know where this is going, like, ooh, wow, this is good. They outthought me, and that's, that's a bit, vanity on my part, thinking I can outthink other people, but entertaining them, giving them that, here's a chance to be able to escape mentally, and enjoy something that's, basically risk-free. If it gets too intense, just close the book and pick it up some other time.
Well, and so speaking of the connected world, you guys, are you guys interacting with social media a lot, website, all that? Do you like readers to find you on social media and communicate? Or
absolutely, we do. And so Enigma Series is pretty much the way to get a hold of us, even with these cozy mysteries. And the website, enigmaseries.com, will have samples of free things, mailing lists, downloads, even some ways for people to protect themselves. Simple things like, I know it's going to seem obvious, but a lot of people still don't know how to do passwords and why you have to do them. And the fact that you don't take them under your keyboard. You just don't.
Oh, you don't?
No. I have mine written on a little notepad that's just next to my desk. Yeah. Now everybody knows.
Exactly.
Well, and we don't recommend passwords. We recommend passphrases because they're harder to guess and they take more characters. And so, one of my older password phrases of buy poison to be able to kill the neighbor because he parked his car in my yard again. Those are really difficult passphrases to guess for, so that's the kind of thing that, but it's easy to remember because he's always parking in my yard. So that's the kind of thing that we harp on. Do the easy things first, and technology is what they say, and that's what we capture. But we do give some good, credible tips and recommendations for protecting your online internet security.
Well, and your neighbor was parking on the yard, but he disappeared.
That's why they killed him off in one of the cozy mysteries.
Yeah.
Died in that bed and breakfast.
Exactly, and that was one of the guys we didn't want to bring up because, we can't do that. The trial's still going on.
Yeah.
Too soon. Yeah,
I'm always leery about telling people I plan for stuff because the next thing I know, I'm in front of a judge and they're screaming, premeditated. So I got to be careful,
Be careful what you write. Are you doing social media then too? Or can people find you on TikTok?
Not TikTok. Absolutely not. We did that for a minute and decided that was probably not where we wanted to go.
But there's two of you. You could do viral dance trends and give us advice on password protection.
There you go. Interesting.
While doing the jive.
Interesting. Interesting. I love it. But no, we can.
Jennifer, you may have to coach us on that.
I can do that. That is my day job.
All right. Nice.
Well, there you have it.
But Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and the Enigma series can be found on all those. Also on YouTube. So we have quite a few things on YouTube because of the audiobooks so we have little segments out there on YouTube and of course the book trailers are out there as well, and we'd love to have people go to the Enigma series on YouTube and subscribe. That would be awesome.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, the Audible books are quite surprising. We teamed up with an absolutely brilliant voice actor, and he does all of the techno thriller series for us, and so we've got the Audible. So if reading and on ebooks or hard copy is not your thing, I'm going to recommend the Audible. that we have available. One of the listeners wrote in, griping, like, I can't believe you guys. I'm so irritated with you. I said, what's the matter? I shot back, and he goes, you know, I started on one of your books. I couldn't do anything the rest of the weekend. I mean, it shoots for 9 hours, and, you know, I want my time back. I said, did you enjoy the book? And he goes, well, yeah. Where's the next one?
You know, what can I say? You can't win them all.
You can't please everybody all the time. There it is.
Well, it's been fun having you on again. And, of course, now the book we're talking about is The Killer Enigma, Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles, Book 16. Our guests have been the authors, Charles Brakefield and Rox Berkey. So thank you for being here, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Ellen, thank you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.